Welcome back to the Florida History Podcast. I'm Carter Krishnire. This week I'm joined by Ryan Ray, longtime contributor, former contributor to the Florida Squeeze, and someone who's written in a number of different places and has a unique knowledge of Florida history and Florida politics. Welcome, Ryan.
Great to be here with you again, Carter. It's been a while. And looking forward to it. That's good stuff, baby.
Yeah, so today, Ryan, we're going to talk about the 1950 U.S. Senate race. We're going to talk about Claude Pepper, a legend of Florida politics and of leftist politics in the country, New Deal politics, and George Smathers, who we've discussed previously on this podcast, great buddy of JFK, LBJ, and Richard Nixon. So let's just set the stage for this Democratic primary in 1950, Ryan. Claude Pepper has been a U.S. senator. He's a sitting U.S. senator. He is the liberal lion, one of the leaders of the New Deal liberal wing of the Democratic Party. George Smathers' claim to fame, he'd been in Congress in the House for 4 years, but his claim to fame really was that he was the captain of the University of Florida basketball team when he was in college. Basically, Smathers was known as a playboy. That was really kind of the genesis of his relationship with John F. Kennedy. They would cruise around town together. He sold his condo in Key Biscayne to Richard Nixon. We know the history of that. He actually introduced Richard Nixon to Bebe Rebozo. So, important figure in American history in terms of being kind of a ancillary figure to more exceptional and more powerful people. So bottom line, Ryan, he is basically an unexceptional guy who gets drafted to run in the Democratic primary against Claude Pepper. And because he's running against Claude Pepper, who is an ideological symbol, he gets all kinds of assistance. Take us from there.
Yeah, I mean, with Smathers, who a lot of people will know as the eponym of the great George Smathers Library at University of Florida.
Yeah.
In many ways, one of the greatest Florida blue key kind of political figures in Florida history. But yeah, an undistinguished person who was very much drafted, and I hope that we can get into this a little bit. To take out Pepper, there's obviously nothing to be gained from a Republican-Democrat perspective in terms of growing the caucus or anything. Pepper, a close confidant of FDR, a great friend with President Roosevelt and a strong Democrat in a one-party state at the time, Florida very much part of the solid South, where there was really no threat of a Republican taking the seat. Smathers basically explicitly recruited by Ed Ball, founder of the AIF, Associated Industries of Florida, which is a very extreme conservative organization that's still very, 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 very active and very influential in Tallahassee state politics in Florida here today. Basically amid sort of precursor to McCarthyism. It was a precursor to what was very much an active part of the Red Scare that was happening at the time. Pepper, probably the South's only New Dealer at the time, was someone who had a foreign policy that wanted to embrace the Soviet Union, or at least embrace peace with the Soviet Union. It was called Pink Pepper. It's called Red Pepper. It was derided for his left-wing views on things like social welfare, and I think also very key in terms of the calculus for recruiting Smathers was he was involved in 1948, parallels to today, right? In 1948, of committing the apostasy of opposing Truman.
Yes.
And wanting someone to the left of him, perhaps himself, perhaps Henry Wallace, others, a more thoroughgoing progressive who is going to pursue racial justice, social justice, and a more labor-oriented domestic policy. So all of these things are this whole constellation of issues very much at play when considering why Smathers was got the call and why he was put up to run against, at the time, two-term incumbent Senator Claude Pepper.
So David Brinkley, one of the most famous television journalists in the history of this country, one of the most famous political journalists in the history of this country, perhaps, said that the in terms of his career, which spanned from the 1940s in Washington till he retired from This Week with David Brinkley at ABC in the late 90s, the dirtiest campaign he ever saw was the Democratic primary in 1950 in Florida between Claude Pepper and George Smathers. And Smathers' victory and Smathers' tactics really ushered in the era of McCarthyism. Walk us through a little bit of that, Ryan.
Oh, yeah. There's a famous, maybe we can include in the notes or something, maybe an image of this. There was a lot of pamphleteering going around yep. about the record, the red record of Claude Pepper, who was, secretly a Soviet agent, and all of that stuff. Partly folks were exploiting a real connection to the Soviet Union. I mean, there's no question about it. I think in a place that was animated by the self-interest, the national interest of the U.S. and not going to nuclear war with another superpower. But also, I do think that probably he did have some kinship, which a lot of people did look askance at him about. I know some of his close friends and confidants said, "Hey, boy, hey there, Ed. Claude, you better get your stuff together here because people are finding this a little bit funny." There's really no space for anything like that to have a sort of affinity or consider the interests of another country and your own foreign policy views now as then. So any number of dirty tricks were deployed. Obviously, painting him, tarring and feathering him as basically an enemy of the state. Is a pretty broadside, pretty heavy hit to assign to your political opponent. And again, I think some of that stuff from actual sort of kinship with Soviet ideals or folks in the country. But then also, I think a lot of this was ginned up because of his affinity and his very galvanized strong support for labor and for egalitarian domestic policy that included a redistribution of wealth in the early post-war period. So, yeah, Ed Ball, the founder of the AIF, he was, again, an heir to the DuPont fortune, one of the greatest fortunes in American history. And at the time, I think Mr. Ball, probably one of the richest people in Florida, who was super-duper active in politics and, again, helped set up the AIF, which, has made... it made its business sort of trouncing any sort of thinking, any sort of progressive politicians and politics. Basically, set up shop. They designed an entire apparatus around smearing and around just viciously attacking Claude Pepper as being a racist in Miami-Dade County, where minority votes were significant, or as too friendly to minorities and other aspects of the state, whichever was convenient at the time. And then, of course, we have, maybe you can tell the story, the infamous, very likely apocryphal redneck speech, right?
Yeah, so...
Right, so let me quote this alleged speech that George Smathers gave in 1950. Quote, "Are you aware that Claude Pepper is known all over Washington as a shameless extrovert? Not only that, but this man is reliably reported to practice nepotism with his sister-in-law. He has a brother who is a known homo sapien, and he has a sister who was once a thespian in Wicked New York. Worst of all, it is an established fact that Mr. Pepper, before his marriage, habitually practiced celibacy." Unquote. So... we're recording this in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic, and I hope everybody is home and safe and staying safe. But this harkens to a history in Florida politics of attacking Northerners, attacking Yankees, attacking city slickers, attacking liberals that Ron DeSantis, our current governor, once again embraced a few weeks ago when he basically dubbed the coronavirus the New York virus. We've done everything we can in Florida to stop the virus. It's those darn New Yorkers, it's those darn Yankees bringing the virus here. Now, I quickly saw that this was what traditionally has happened in this state when you're trying to demagogue and get a certain vote. New York is mentioned, the North is mentioned, and there are just all sorts of implications. So this is just a classic political tactic in the state of Florida. The implication, Ryan, of course, being it's the Northerners, it's the left-wingers, it's the unions, it's the African-Americans, it's all of these people pushing Claude Pepper. If you're a good Floridian, vote for George Smathers.
The carpetbaggers, yeah, they both exchanged. I think we should say, George Smathers, again, the redneck speech, likely apocryphal. I think he offered a reward to anybody who can prove that it happened, and no one ever took him up on it. But nonetheless, I think it stays around the lore because it rings true. They wouldn't have stuck around if people didn't immediately kind of want to believe it was true because of some of the other tactics that were leveled at Senator Pepper. I think Claude also took shots at Claude Pepper, who grew up in the most destitute, desperate poverty in lower Alabama, southern Alabama. Grew up destitute with a single mother, experienced poverty, which I think was really instructive to his views as an adult and in politics. But Claude attacked George as a carpetbagger for being up north, which he was, and then in turn, Smathers attacked Pepper for attending Harvard Law School in the wicked north in Massachusetts. I think that really this stuff mostly played out, like you said, along ideological lines. I mean, down here, the north was sort of synonymous with African Americans, with communists, with scary, liberal, big government ideas. That's right. Other elements of society that were antithetical to what most southern white, southern maybe conservative leaning voters saw as their way of life.
Yeah, so Ed Ball puts lots of money and all of the business interests and industrial interests behind George Smathers. Smathers on primary day carries every single county down the Florida East Coast Railway line from Jacksonville to Miami. Very small margin in Dade County, which was Smathers' home county, which was more liberal than the rest of the state already, would get even more and more liberal in the future. As we've talked about in the previous podcast, Hubert Humphrey won Dade County by double digits while he was getting trounced everywhere else in the state in 1968 by Richard Nixon and George Wallace. And the same day Leroy Collins carried Miami-Dade, or Dade County as it was known then, by double digits when he, I believe, did not win a single other county in the state. He may have won Alachua by a small margin, but I think he might have lost the other 66 counties against Ed Gurney, but he won Dade by double digits. So by the 1960s, Dade was very much like a northern liberal place. It would eventually be Pepper's home county, too, as we'll talk about shortly. Then you get a little further north. Broward and Palm Beach were already becoming much more conservative, influenced by Midwesterners and eventually Northeasterners that would move to that area. When the Northeasterners would move, they would swing a little further to the left, obviously, and that's why those are liberal counties now, but were conservative counties in the 1950s and 1960s. You then go further north. Brevard County did not have the influx yet of educated engineers that would come with the space program, but was already becoming kind of more of a Midwestern Republican-style county. That's why Lou Fry and Ed Gurney were able to win in those counties. Lou Fry was, of course, from Orlando, but he ran in an area that included Brevard County. Further north, St. John's and Jacksonville, Duval County, were very much ahead of the rest of the state in terms of industry. The irony, Ryan, is the old traditional southern counties, the rural counties, the traditional conservative counties tended to support Pepper. And the newly industrialized counties with a lot of, yes, carpetbaggers, the name you mentioned, the word you mentioned earlier, and northerners and northern financial interests, that Smathers, even though you would think it would be the reverse, but history has changed a lot. Progressives now tend to be in urban areas and vice versa with conservatives. But in the 1950s, it wasn't necessarily that clear, particularly in the South. So, Ryan, I want to talk a little bit about this in closing, this race and its implication on the national political landscape and the era of McCarthyism. Nixon, who has been classmates with Smathers, they both came to the House in the huge 1946 freshman class and became friendly. We talked a little bit earlier about how friendly they would be later in life when Nixon was president. But Smathers' tactics are then emulated by Richard Nixon, who wins the 1950 U.S. Senate race in California, beating Congresswoman Helen Gehagen Douglas, who had also been in the House. Helen Gehagen Douglas allegedly at the time was having an affair with one Lyndon Johnson, who had just moved to the U.S. Senate 2 years earlier in a disputed election in Texas, heavily disputed election. So there are all these little threads of American and Florida history tied together. And of course, we now know in tapes that have come out in the last 2 or 3 years that even at the end of LBJ's presidency, he was accusing Richard Nixon of treason when it came to the issue of Vietnam and his secret plan, right? And had actually called the Senate Minority Leader Everett Dirksen, and there's now a tape of this recording where he's saying that Nixon, what he's doing is darn near treason. And obviously, Johnson had fixed the Democratic nomination in 1968 for Hubert Humphrey, his vice president, and who had been a close ally of his in the U.S. Senate, and was trying to will Humphrey over the finish line as that election tightened as it closed, actually, in 68. I mean, if there had been another week or two, Humphrey might have won.
All Nixon had to do to win that election in 68, although he, wouldn't have faced Johnson, all he had to do was benefit from the assassination of Robert Kennedy, who I believe would have won that year. But nonetheless, yes, he called his opponent pink down to her underwear.
Yes,
I believe.
Correct.
He was he didn't invent red baiting, anti-communist McCarthyite red baiting, but in a sense he was one of the people who perfected it in that election. And I think that we got a great preview of it in 1950 right here in Florida.
Yeah, as you say, Nixon emulated Smathers' tactics in the way he described Helen Gehagen Douglas, similar to the way Smathers had described Claude Pepper in the Democratic primary in this state. Then there are reverberations around the nation. Miller Tidings, who's a moderate Democratic senator from Maryland, very, very well respected, not a liberal at all, but his son, who ended up being in Congress, was very liberal, Joseph Tidings, but Miller Tidings was not. But he denounces McCarthy, steps out, denounces McCarthy before anyone else does, basically says this is all nonsense, what this guy's saying, and gets upset by some unknown Republican in the general election that November. And then Harry Truman, who had been behind this whole Smathers thing to begin with, it ends up coming back on him. I mean, maybe that's a little bit of karma. Maybe that's what some people feel, but it comes back on Truman because, Ryan, the reality is Truman was impaired in office because McCarthy was running wild and accusing all these members of Truman's administration of being communist and Truman of harboring communists in his administration. And then the Korean War is underway, and Truman, I think, very bravely and heroically fires General MacArthur. But then that ends up being, oh, you know, he's coddling the communists again. So the reverberations, the trigger on the era of McCarthyism is often said to be the speech that Senator McCarthy gave in Wheeling, West Virginia, which was the start of it. But the actual fuse, the fire, I believe, maybe this is me being partial as a Floridian, was when Smathers beat Pepper in this primary. Because then, all gloves were off. People thought McCarthyism was a winning issue. As I said, he gives a speech in Wheeling, and people like Miller Tidings are like, this guy's crazy, and basically says he's a drunk, whatever, let's ignore him. Tidings himself gets beat that fall.
That point.
Yeah, I think it even casts a pall over his more limited, not his fair deal reforms that I think were basically common sense sort of social democracy steps. I agree that it did. You know, you ride the back of the tiger, right? And sometimes you end up inside. But Smathers definitely perfected. There was a formula that Smathers used to oust a sitting U.S. senator in a primary election. I mean, again, the primary election isn't as dramatic as it sounds now, since we were a solid South one-party state, essentially. I think the eventual Republican, who really no one even knows about, John P. Booth, won something like 20-something or 30%. It wasn't even contested. Everything was said and done in the Senate Democratic primary. The fact that he was able to oust this really well-known with a national profile, someone that had the whole Roosevelt apparatus around him, that brought so much investment. Maybe we might talk in the future about the New Deal in South Florida and how much modern South Florida, really all over, from Tallahassee all over Florida, how much Florida was able to become habitable for the great migration of people that would come to Florida in the post-war boom times. So much of that logistically was even possible because of Claude Pepper, because of all the investment, all the federal investment that he was able to leverage from his personal friendship with FDR during the New Deal period. For someone to oust, for someone like George Smathers, who an undistinguished sort of middle backbencher member of Congress, using the money of a wealthy special interest that just wanted to punch left on behalf of business, using these sort of social wedge, sort of scare tactics and red baiting, it definitely caught a lot of people's interest, and he contributed significantly a big chapter of a playbook that would be very influential going forward.
Yeah, we can wrap up a little bit talking about George Smathers' legislative career. He was a nothing for the most part. He was a backbencher in the U.S. Senate. He was a do boy or errand boy for the conservative Southern Democrats. He signed the Southern Manifesto. He was involved in every filibuster of a civil rights bill in that era, the 57 Civil Rights Act, the 1960 Civil Rights Act, and of course, culminating in the 1964 Civil Rights Act. He famously offered to pay Martin Luther King's bail when Martin Luther King Jr. was jailed in St. Augustine during the Senate filibuster in 1964 of the Civil Rights Act. The St. Augustine movement, a big part of the passage of the landmark 1964 Civil Rights Act, and we've talked about that on this show before and obviously on the Florida Squeeze. He offered to pay Martin Luther King's bail if he would never come back to Florida. Obviously, King turned down his offer. In fact, Smathers, there was a very good chance, and it seems like since the Kennedy assassination and since we've seen historical records uncovered, there was a very strong possibility Kennedy was going to drop LBJ from the ticket in 1964 and replace him with George Smathers, who would have just been kind of an obedient... I don't know what he would have been. I mean, it would have harkened back to the days when he picked, obviously George H.W. Bush picked Dan Quayle. It would have been like that.
Great history. That's so true. I think that he's obviously very ideologically promiscuous. So.
Yeah, I should say a couple positive things about Smathers. He did vote for the 1965 Voting Rights Act after opposing it the first time around through the Senate, and he was one of a small number of Southern Democrats in the Senate that supported. Actually, we had a fair number of Florida Congress people who did, including Claude Pepper. By that time, he's obviously in a Miami-based House seat. He was the only member of the Florida delegation to vote for the 1964 Civil Rights Act. He votes for the 1965 Voting Rights Act, as does Smathers on final passage, as does Charlie Bennett from Jacksonville, Dante Fussell, Paul Rogers. There were a few other members. We've got Bill Cramer, the Republican from St. Petersburg, voted for the Voting Rights Act, and Sam Gibbons from Tampa did as well. But I do want to say George Smathers did work hard to get Biscayne National Park, what is now Biscayne National Park, but what at the time was just a national monument designated by the Johnson administration in the dying days of the Johnson administration in 1968. Who knows what would have happened if it had not been designated. Nixon came into office. Nixon was pretty pro-environment. Actually, Nixon did a great thing in terms of decommissioning the Cross Florida Barge Canal, as you've talked about, Ryan, previously on the Florida Squeeze, and also the Everglades Jet Port, which was a horrible proposal, which Nixon eventually killed, along with Claude Kirk, to Claude Kirk's credit. But had that not been designated by the time, let's say, Reagan becomes president, and it didn't become a national park until Carter made it a national park in 1980, had it been undesignated entering the Reagan years, and this building frenzy in South Florida, and the eventual teardown of growth management laws in the state, I think the areas that are Biscayne National Park now would probably be some sort of artificial islands with all kinds of waterfront development, and the aquatic wonder, which, and it's one of the great aquatic wonders in the country, and it's the only seaborne national park in the national park system, would have been destroyed. So I give Smathers credit for that, and he does deserve credit for that. But anyway, Ryan, Claude Pepper, 1962, gets elected to a House seat from Miami and becomes a champion of liberal and New Deal causes in the U.S. House, has this second act, this renaissance. And in fact, he was on the cover of Time magazine in 1938 as a leading New Deal liberal senator, and in 1983 as the spokesperson for elderly Americans, and the person who was annoying Ronald Reagan the most. Reagan could deal with Tip O'Neill much better than he could deal with Claude Pepper. So Pepper, his legend grows, and Smathers just fades into obscurity. Maybe that's the way history was supposed to be. Even though Smathers won the election, he lost the war.
It's very true. I think that Pepper had probably the greatest second act that I can think of after suffering a humiliating defeat. And it's a huge, I mean, in terms of the tectonic plates of American politics and the U.S. Senate, the shift that happened there, it was massive, just such an incredible, colossal failure. After he tried to oust Spencer Holland,
yes.
U.S. Senator of Florida, Spencer Holland, in 1958, unsuccessfully, and then, as you say, got elected to I think a newly drawn Miami-based House seat in 62, and represented the district until his death in 89. And he was known as, probably in terms of social welfare, in terms of adding and amending Great Society and other programs for seniors. He is recognized as one of the great leaders in all of American politics and policy on that front. And I guess I would just leave you with, interestingly, Alan Grayson, I think, styled himself a bit after Pepper, I think imperfectly, but his interest in gerontology and aging and his sponsorship of additions to Medicare, Medicaid benefits to benefit seniors were influenced by him, and so many others are. And Senator Pepper, Congressman Pepper, a great debt of gratitude.
Yeah, I know Congressman Grayson admired Claude Pepper, and he was not the only Florida liberal people on the far left of the political spectrum in the state that did. I think, again, Pepper's legend has grown, his second act, and then after his life, after his death, his legend has grown while George Smathers has faded into obscurity. I mean, no one knows who he is. I mean, you might see Smathers Beach or Smathers Library or something named after him and say, oh, yeah, it's just like another guy that things are named after. So thank you, Ryan, for joining us. Thank you for your time. Obviously, in this day and age, more of the Democrats are like George Smathers than Claude Pepper. I talk about Pepper's legend growing, but we got this corporate wing of the Democratic Party that seems to be running the party these days, and they probably see George Smathers and guys like Bill Gunter as their heroes.
It was a pleasure to talk about this with you. Thanks for having me.
Great, thank you.
So you can get a new edition of the Florida History Podcast every week, wherever you find your podcasts. Until next week, I'm Carter Krishnire. We'll catch you then. Stay safe, everybody.